Vanya Blondes is Hollywood's godfather of horror. He was the executive producer and driving force behind iconic horror classics, including Halloween, Halloween 2, Hell Night, and Scream for Help. His successes have made Michael Myers' Halloween masks standard inventory in costume shops, and Michael's name part of the American lexicon. His new book, The Man Who Created Halloween, is wonderfully readable. Let's meet him now. Welcome, Erwin. Thanks for visiting us on the Halloween edition of the Book Report.
My pleasure, Elaine.
Now, you were born in Brooklyn. I was born in Pittsburgh. Yet, we share a common memory from our childhood. Your mother and my grandmother washed the floors every week and covered them in newspaper. You gotta wonder why. Why was that?
You're not that old. You can't be that old.
My grandmother was.
Oh, my goodness. Old habits die hard. Did she have linoleum?
I think so.
Oh, my God. We had that, as I describe in the book.
Yes.
This florid, ugly linoleum. But I'll tell you, it shined all the time.
What brought you from the East Coast? You were born in Brooklyn, as I said, to the West Coast.
I grew up in Brooklyn, as I said in the book, and my brother and I both. And we were Depression-era kids, and life was tough. We were poor. We left school at an early age when we both went into the Army, and when we got out, we were looking for something to do. We had our futures were not too promising. So somehow we wound up, because we had met some man at a beach resort in Far Rockaway. It actually was a bunch of little bungalows. And he said, when you get out of the Army, look us up. We can maybe give you a place in the shipping room. So we wound up loading trucks for Warner Brothers. And because in those days, if you didn't need the college credentials and the educational tools that you must have today, but if you had energy and you had desire, you got noticed. So we eventually got up to the sales office, and we wound up going through the distribution system. In those days, all the movie companies had offices all over the United States. Usually there were about 35, and I was willing to take $5. I would load up my car and go any place for a raise. And so as a result of that, I kind of accelerated my career, and it was distribution. It was sales of movies. In those days, you actually got in your car and drove around, say, in Michigan, and drove all over the state and called on little theater owners, and many of them sort of did it as a second avocation. Many of them had hardware stores and other businesses, and you have to catch them on the fly. And I have an episode in the book that I describe where I found some guy painting his fence, but you'd sell the movies right out of your car. And it was a great training, great education. You got to meet people all over the country and got to understand the regional differences. And eventually I found myself in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles office selling movies. I was a salesman. Once I got exposed to the movie business and people actually made movies, I began to realize this is what I really wanted to do. By that time, I had progressed to the point where I was sales manager, and I was moving up in the ranks, and my brother was charting a parallel course. My brother wound up as president of Paramount Pictures. I'm just cutting through the fat, but that sort of curtailed my activities at Paramount, and I decided it was time I went out and made my own movies and started my own company. I created a company called Compass International Pictures with a young lawyer by the name of Joseph Wolf, who helped me raise $50,000, and we decided we would distribute movies. Well, the problem with that became the reality that we had no movies to distribute, and they were hard to come by. So it was necessary for us to make movies. Well, I started to look around and figure out how we could do it, and we didn't have the funds. But along the way, I met a man named Mustafa Akkad. Mustafa Akkad was a man who had made a movie called, very appropriately to be discussed today, a picture called Muhammad, Messenger of God, that nobody wanted to distribute in the United States. And so it was a story of the prophet, and it starred Anthony Quinn, Irene Pappas. It was quite an epic, but no one wanted to do it. And Rogers and Cowan, the famous public relations people, they called me and asked me if I would take a look at the film and meet with him. And I did. I thought the picture was beautiful, and I told him that I would love to do the film, but I don't have the resources. He agreed. We made a deal to provide the funds for Prince advertising and all the marketing expenses. I had met a young man named John Carpenter who had made a picture called Assault on Precinct 13 that I distributed. It didn't do a lot of business, but it was something that showed me a young man with great talent. So I was in London on my way to Milan for a film festival when I got a phone call from a certain Michael Myers. And he was an Englishman who distributed movies in England, in London, and asked if he could meet with me. I said, yes, of course. And he said, I love this movie. He said, I think if we enter it into the London Film Festival, it can really get a lot of attention. And I said, wow, that's exciting. And so we made a deal. He did that. It won the London Film Festival. And that got me thinking about how I had to find a film for this young talent. I was on my way back from Italy, and I was thinking to myself, I've got to find a movie for this guy. I got to find something that we can do together because he's a rare talent, and eventually the studios are going to find out about him, and I better get to him before they do. And well, it has to be a horror film because my theory about horror films was being universal and their appeal. And I said, wow, maybe we'll do a movie about babysitters in Jeopardy because that's something that everyone can relate to. Babysitters are... Everyone's hired a babysitter or been a babysitter or been a baby. So I kept thinking, yeah, we'll do it all in one night because we can control the cost and locations will be limited. And Halloween popped into my mind out of nowhere. And I said, wow, Halloween. I wonder if anyone has ever done a movie with called Halloween before. And I'm going to call John Carpenter right now. And I got on the phone. I had to throw my bags down. I said, John... I got him. I said, John, what do you think about a movie about babysitters in Jeopardy? And it all takes place on the scariest night of the year, Halloween. He said, oh, my goodness, don't tell me anymore. I got the whole picture. Boop, boop, boop. We bounced ideas off one another, and I gave him some simple guidelines. I said, look, I said, John, this movie has to be theater of the mind. Think of a radio show. What the audience sees is what they conjure up in their mind. And I want this orchestrated so that the spooks and the scares come methodically every so often and the audience gets jangled and totally throw them off balance. Let's take them to the right side of the screen and scare them on the left. He understood that completely. And I said, no blood or gore. This has to be character-driven. And I said, can we do it for $300,000?
Actually, what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome with such a small budget?
Well, just about everything. The first thing you have to overcome is getting the picture finished on time and on budget. The second is to get the quality that will allow you to get into theaters and not have it look like a student film. I had to get the money. I didn't have $300,000. I go back to my partner, Mustafa Akkad. Later on, we increased the budget by $25,000 to get Donald Pleasance. Well, John called me up one day and told me he wanted me to meet Jamie Lee Curtis, a young actress that he thought would be right for the part. So I met with her, and she really was impressive, and I knew she was a real fine little actress. But what really intrigued me more than that was the fact that she was the daughter of Tony Curtis and Janet Lee. More Janet Leigh than Tony Curtis, because in my mind I got this whole image of Psycho, and if I could get a photograph of her mother in the shower scene.
I wanted to ask you, with technology so far advanced right now, what kind of advice would you give to filmmakers who are trying to get their foot in the door?
Just go make a movie. It's easier than ever. With digital cameras today and all the lightweight equipment, anybody with a good idea or a good story, go out and make the movie. For example, the key to Halloween, I think, is the story. The story is a good one in that you care about these people. There's an element of truth to it, and I believe that for young filmmakers, my best advice would be write or get connected with a good writer. The book is more than just the story of Halloween, although that is the hook, as they say. You know, the subtext is how a bit of desperation and inspiration created the movie that changed the way Hollywood movies were made. And I talk a lot in the book about how I came from relative obscurity, from a childhood that was deprived, from a future with no promise, and how I was able through, not overnight, but through a long process of work and application and perseverance, achieve something.
I want to tell the readers that your book is really readable. Every page, you just connect with you as a person, like, instantly from page one. And I want to congratulate you on that.
Oh, you're so kind, Elaine. It's nice to talk to somebody whose business is books for a change. By the way, that movie's coming out. You know, we're releasing that film in 1,000 theaters this Halloween for the first time since the initial release.
Oh, I don't know if I've got the guts enough to watch it.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Bye-bye.